And welcome to Minute 4 of Season 7 of the Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Jake Lewitt of the Deep Blue Sea Pod. Welcome back to the show, Jake.
I don't know whether I should say hello or not. I need to say Simon Says Hello.
Simon Says, say hello, Jay.
Hello, Jay.
There you go. That works.
There we go.
Why not? Why not? So minute 4 begins with Simon making all the rules and ends with Cobb just staring out into space.
Oh, he's looking at something. He's looking at someone and he's not happy about it.
That's right. So yesterday we started things off with Cobb. I think we're just going to call him Cobb because we don't know if it's Walter or Arthur. Sure. Doesn't really make a difference. You know, so Cobb basically gets a phone call and he was treated to a little bit of a nursery rhyme. And then this minute begins with him saying, "Who is this?" He goes, "Call me Simon. What do you want?" "I want to play a game." "What kind of game?" "Simon Says." Simon's going to tell Lieutenant McLean what to do, and Lieutenant McLean is going to do it. Non-compliance will result in a penalty. What penalty? Another big bang in a very public place. What is it that you want Lieutenant McLean to do? Simon says Lieutenant McLean is to go to the corner of 138th Street in Amsterdam, which is in Harlem, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, this is an interesting conversation between the two of them. So, I mean, the first thing that jumps out, obviously, is the fact that he talks about the game that he wants to play. It's called Simon Says. Am I wrong in assuming that you're familiar with this game?
I am familiar with this game. I referenced it in the intro to this episode.
Well, maybe you're just familiar because... Yes, you did. I'm aware of that. I'm saying, have you played this game? Let me rephrase that question.
Yes, it's a kid's game. I played it as a child. Not recently.
Okay. So do you want to explain what the game is, or do you want me to explain what it is?
Sure. So in Simon Says, you'd have somebody who is... They don't have to be called Simon. I want to make this clear. You can play this game regardless what your name is. But you take on the role of Simon. This domineering godlike figure who everyone must do as you decree, but only if you precede it with the expression Simon Says. If you do not precede it with that expression and they do the task you say to do, they lose a point, they're out, however you want to do it. If you say Simon Says and they don't do it, they lose a point, they're out, whatever you want to do. If they do the job and you said Simon Says, great, they're still in the game. And you could play it, I guess, where you're out if you do it wrong, and the last person playing is the most obedient when they're told to do something. Basically, there's a streaming service called Dropout based on College Humor, the YouTube comedy show from a few years back. Dropout exists now, and they do a show called Game Changer, which the host Sam Reich, he comes up with a new game each episode, but the players who are playing it, it's always comedians, they don't know what game they're playing until they start playing it, and even then they're not told the rules. They got to pick it up as they go.
Oh wow.
It's really fun. And they've done an episode which they call Sam Says, because the host is called Sam, and so they don't know they're going to play a version of Simon Says until they start playing it. And the episodes of Sam Says are amongst the best. They are very fun. I think one of them has made it off of the streaming service and onto YouTube, so you can just search, Google Sam Says or Sam Says Game Changer. Yeah, there's a 24-minute episode with Lou Wilson, Brennan Lee Mulligan, and Izzy, I can't remember her surname, but there, it's very fun because it's a more, it's like when I say adult themed, it's not like R rated, but it's more as a grown up version of a kid's game, and it's very entertaining. I'd recommend it.
Okay, I will definitely check it out. Sounds very interesting. So yes, it is a game where basically you have someone who plays Simon, and the idea is that they give commands to others. And they have to abide by those commands if they say Simon Says, and if they don't say Simon Says, then they're out of the game. You know, it's a simple game. That's why it's called Simple Simon. right? And basically, the way that the game works is either you have you know, last man standing type of thing, and that's the winner, or if at the same time the last people all get thrown out, I guess, so then Simon actually wins the game.
Yeah, I've never heard that rule before. I saw that. I didn't know there's a way that Simon could win. Simon's already winning by being.
Yeah, but it's always a crazy thing. It's like, Simon says, put your right index finger on your nose. Simon says, you know, and I guess, I think part of the idea is you're supposed to do it as fast as possible.
Sure, so the other process, so it could be out.
As you're giving instructions, and then you just quickly don't say Simon says, and then, oh, I didn't say Simon says, and you're out. You know, that type of thing.
Yeah, the main way they catch people out on Sam says is he'll say, like, Sam says, touch your finger to your nose, and he'll do it. Sam says, touch your finger to your ear, and he'll do it. And Sam says, touch your finger to your other ear, but he'll put his finger on his nose. So he's doing like an opposite action.
Correct.
And he's catching them out. Yeah. So the person in the Simon role can be an absolute bastard if they want to be.
Well, I think that's the point.
Yes.
I mean, there are tons of different countries where this game is used, and each of them have their own names. You know, some of them are just very funny. Like in Afrikaans, it's known as Colonel Commands. I mean, most of them, it's you know, a different person's name. Sometimes the leader says...
Are they all alliterative? So it's like Colonel Commands, Simon says. They always have the same letter for both.
No.
Both.
No. Not at all.
That's a shame.
Yeah. You have in China, it's known as the teacher says. In the Netherlands, I love this one. It's called Commando.
Okay, great. Any indications what you're supposed to wear whilst playing that game?
Hopefully more than what John Cena wore at the Oscars.
Yes, hopefully more than an envelope, certainly.
That's right. Are names of people which are giving commands, and some places it's known as the King Commands, like in Norway. I don't know. In Poland, it's known as Father Virgil.
Okay.
And in Vietnam, it's I Say.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I Say, put your finger to your, you know, the pin. Now, are you familiar with the electronic game Simon?
I have seen it. I have never played it. It's a repetition game, isn't it? Lights flash and you play the sequence. Yeah,
that's right. It's like that's right. And that is basically named after this game.
Sure.
It's the same basic idea, you know, where you have to follow through and do the same thing with the other, you know, what was shown right beforehand. Yeah, that type of thing. There's also a game known as Following John. Are you familiar with that game?
Nope, never heard of that one.
Which is similar to Follow the Leader. Where basically the idea is whatever the leader does, you have to also repeat that same thing.
I haven't played any version of that game. I'm not familiar with that.
I'm pretty sure as a kid I probably played Follow the Leader, but I don't remember. No clue. So Simon, in continuing to explain things, he mentions the neighborhood of Harlem, which is an area in it's a neighborhood in Upper Manhattan in New York. It starts at the Harlem River and 155th Street, and then it has Fifth Avenue on the east side, Central Park North on the south, and the Hudson River on the west. So basically that's the area for anyone who's geographically familiar with New York. You know, you can probably try to visualize where all of those. It was originally a Dutch village that was started in 1658, and it's named after a city in the Netherlands known as Haarlem, which is H-A-A-R-L-E-M. Essentially, there were many Italian and Jewish Americans that moved there. But in the beginning of the 20th century, it started to become more populated by African-American residents till it reached the point where there was so much crime and poverty there that, you know, it got a very bad name. and it still has a bad name, even though in the last decade or two, the amount of crime has gone down from what it was beforehand. There are four New York City fire department companies that are located within the area, and you have two police precincts. They're also the 28th and the 32nd police precincts. So it's it's an area that comes up quite often in movies and TV shows and things like that, especially ones dealing with crime or Eddie Murphy comedies. I've probably been through it. I don't remember if I've ever stopped in it. I mean, again, you mentioned this a little bit yesterday. The shot is just amazing here. Anyway, you can say a lot about McTiernan and, you know, the type of stuff that he has done in his life that are a little strange and crazy and stuff like that. But he is a great director with the way that he does stuff. I mean, he basically rotates the camera around Cobb's face, but a very, very close-up shot of, like, his eyes and nose and stuff like that as this whole conversation is going on. Yeah. And I like it. It makes it very intimate. It makes it feel as if we are right there listening to this phone conversation.
Yeah, just seeing the realization on his face that this wasn't one thing. This isn't over. This is going to be a whole thing.
Right. And as you know, we finished the dialogue that I said before about where Simon says it's in Harlem, if I'm not mistaken. At that point, we see Cobb's face like jerk to the side, and the camera shot is great because like he moves to his right, and then the next shot we see is of the cops in the bullpen. You know, we see Lambert and Connie again and stuff like that.
Yeah, so we follow his look to go look right at them, and then the camera whips back to him going left. Yeah,
right, exactly. It's done really, really well. And I mean, I was trying to look at some of the stuff on his wall. I mean, there's a picture of what I would assume is the police commissioner or whatever, but I looked up who the police commissioner was at the time, and that's not his picture. So it could just be some random person, you know, that they decided, you know, the guy in the production department decided to put his picture there as the New York City commissioner or whatever it is. We see some sort of diploma. It's way too far. You can't read what it says there. Then there are a few other plaques that have like engraved pictures of people on them, which is also interesting. You know, maybe it's something from maybe it's a his father or grandfather or something like that.
Cobb has a military background. And like that's his unit. Like, cause one of them's got a small metal head, and then a bunch of names, I'm guessing, engraved underneath it. It's one that's kind of half concealed by the flag. Like, that could be like, yeah, his dad's unit or in World War II, perhaps, or his own in Vietnam.
Vietnam or something like that. Yeah, it's very possible. And then there's a flag there. Do you know what this flag represents?
It looks like the French flag, but with a fringe around it and then an emblem in the middle. I'm guessing it's some kind of police flag.
It is the New York City flag.
Oh. Okay.
Every borough has its own flag also, but this is the flag of the entire city.
Every borough has a flag? That's too many flags.
Every borough. Borough. There are five boroughs.
Yeah, that's too many flags.
No. Maybe. That's it. Could be. Now the design is derived from the Dutch flag because it's been used since New Amsterdam was around in 1625. So that's why you can think that it looks more similar to something that you would have in France. But the difference is that this is orange, not red.
See, we have in England, we have flag. Like every county has a flag, which is again, it's too many flags. I've just googled. My hometown county is Hampshire, which is also where the Isle of Wight is. I've just googled Hampshire flag. I have never seen this thing before in my life. It's like the top half is red, the bottom half is yellow, and there's a flower on the bottom half and a crown on the top. I've never seen that.
Does that mean you've never been to like county court or the city hall where you need to take care of something?
I mean, I never have in Hampshire. I've been to the town hall in Dorset, where I live now, to get married. But the Dorset flag, again, I'm not familiar with it. It's all yellow with a white and red cross. And the only flag that I'm familiar with is the Cornwall flag, because they're very. It's like a black and white cross. It's like a pirate flag, because they put that on a bunch of stuff in Cornwall. But I've not seen any of these other flags. I don't like flags in general. Why do we have so many?
So you and Dr. Sheldon Cooper would not get along. That's what you're telling me.
We would not. No, I do not have fun with flags. I have fury at flags.
Okay.
Flags just add to the whole separating of countries and patriotism and all these other negative things. Everyone's just get along. We're not a bunch of countries. We're one planet.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. So there's a whole bunch of things that are seen on this flag. I mean, we can't see it here, obviously, but in the real flag. So you have a bald eagle, which is the symbol of the U.S. You have a picture of a Native American, which is the original inhabitants of the area. You have a seaman, who symbolizes the colonizers who were living there. You have a beaver, which symbolizes the Dutch West Indies Company, which was the first company, to set foot on land there. And the beaver is also the official animal of the state of New York. You have a windmill, which once again alludes to the Dutch history of the city. You have flour barrels, which in the 17th century, New York had a monopoly on milling, which made it a commercial powerhouse. And then it has the number 1625, basically was the fact that New Amsterdam was settled in 1624. So 1625 was a date that they just decided to put on there, and apparently it's wrong.
Yeah.
It's just a completely inconsistent year that is written on there.
Right. I like that.
Yeah.
Our flag is incorrect from day one.
And nobody got around to changing it.
Well, as these things are made, it's hard to change things, I guess. We've made the flag now. What are we supposed to do? Remake it again? This isn't going to last for long. We're not going to talk about this in 400 years' time.
Exactly. No one's gonna be paying attention to these things. Most people probably don't even know that this is the New York City flag. So you can look at it from that perspective too. Right.
Yeah.
And then basically Cobb starts talking to he calls to Kowalski and Lambert to come in, and he goes, "Do you know where to find McLean?" And Lambert goes, "Well, I kind of doubt you're gonna find him in church."
I hate this
comment. And then he goes, "Well, you better find out what rock he's under and kick it over." Which,
Graham Greene, he has a bunch of these throughout the film, just like these off the cuff, snappy remarks that are all bad.
Yeah.
He's like, "I kind of doubt you're going to find him in church." It's not helpful. It's not funny. It's helping us establish John McClane's character as being, like, I don't know, disreputable in some way. I feel like we'd get that.
Yeah.
Like 30 seconds later.
Yeah, we've already figured that one out. But yeah, I mean, it makes sense the way that they would do this. And then we get another great shot as, the camera does a close-up on Cobb, and then another, and then, like, it switches very quickly, and we see Lambert. And unless you know what's happening in the movie, unless you've seen it as many times as we have, they're in a completely different location, but when Cobb is looking towards Lambert, it makes you feel as if they're in the same room right now, as opposed to, and it just switches location on us.
Yeah. And like it's not a very flattering shot of Lambert. No. From, I don't, it's spoiler for tomorrow, it's from John's point of view. John is like in a puddle on the floor.
Yes.
Just a crumpled heap of a human.
Yes.
And Graham Greene is stood up and looking down, and there's a lot of chin going on. There's a lot of neck going on. And yeah, I shot from that angle, I look no better. I look a lot worse. But just it's not an angle you want to be filmed at, and for then it to be paused on my screen for the past 10 minutes. It's just,
well,
not...
no one forced you to pause it at that point.
You did, Rob. You
I did not.
You did.
I did not. You do this to yourself, Jay. Stop trying to blame others for your own faults.
Sure. But and the kind of the withering look that Graham Greene is given, just this kind of pity, this is what we have to. The cards are stacked against. Like, this is what we have to deal with today. Is this? They have this guy with a bomb, several bombs. Who knows? Right. And this is our way out. This guy, this thing,
that's right.
A performance. Oh.
Right. And I love how the camera lingers on Lambert as he's standing, like holding onto the railing, and then he like slowly slithers down to sit down somewhere. Again, we'll only find out tomorrow where they really are, but it's a nice shot. And then the shot changes again, and again it's a perspective from the ground, which we'll explain more tomorrow. And we see, whoever's looking. They see Cobb and Connie, and you see Walsh in the background, which we'll talk about him tomorrow also. And we get to see them for like 2 seconds, and then that's where the minute ends. So Cobb is just staring down at something. We'll have to wait and
see. Yes, he's not happy about it.
No. No. Not happy, but he's still doing it.
Yeah. Pride is not on his face right now.
Not at all. All right. Did you have anything else for this minute?
No, we've covered it.
All right. Yeah. So the script. Once again, we have some stuff that doesn't isn't mentioned in the movie itself. But yesterday we ended in the script with Cobb asking, "Who is this?" So it starts here with Simon saying, "Simon, hello, Arthur. Bloomingdale's was just for show." A pause. "What do you want?" "I want to play a game." "What kind of game?" Simon says, "Is John McClane there?" A pause. Cobb stares at the phone receiver. "Yes." "Good." Suddenly, low and sinister. "Listen to me, Arthur. In the next several hours, Simon is going to tell Detective McClane what to do, and Detective McClane is going to do it. If he fails to comply with the slightest detail of my instructions, there will be a penalty." "What penalty?" "£10 of plastique explosives will be detonated in a crowded public place." Cobb swallows. His throat is suddenly dry. Just a second. Covers the receiver. Yells to his secretary. "Janie, get McClane." Cobb's secretary appears in the doorway. "He just went to Bloomingdale's. Get him. Run." Jane runs off. Cobb takes his hand off the receiver. "What do you want Detective McClane to do?" "Simon says Detective McClane is to stand on the corner of 138th Street and Amsterdam, which is in Harlem, if I'm not mistaken." And that's pretty much how it ends here with the script. So it's somewhat faithful, but we have the discrepancy, as we've talked over the last few days, that in the script John is there with them. It's not a question of having to try and find him. We know that he's a drunk. We know that he's gotten divorced from the script, but we don't know, So it's an interesting way to, it's an interesting angle to give us the story of John.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. I think it's better how they did it in the film.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so.
Yeah. There's a reason they changed it.
No, but there's a reason they changed it, but you just said you'd like it better. You like it better in the script. Film. Like in the film. Okay. I thought you made it sound as if you like the, right. Okay, so every Thursday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track Revenge / Sibling Rivalry Edition, where my guest will give some sort of story, adventure, misadventure, some anecdote, something's happened to them over the course of their life that is somewhat related to either a revenge story or a sibling rivalry story. So, Jay, you have a story for us?
No, I don't. I don't have one. I couldn't think of one, I'm afraid. I'm not a vengeful person. I hold a grudge. I hold grudges for many years, but I don't do anything about it. I just kind of sit on it and simmer. So I've never really gotten revenge on anyone that I can recall. I don't know of anyone getting revenge on me. I try not to create a scenario where somebody would want to get revenge on me. And sibling wise, I have an older sister. We don't have much of a rivalry because she's just better at me than everything, including saying a sentence. She's a year and a half older than me. So we always went to the same schools. And so she was the year above me. Every teacher that I'd have was like, are you Rachel's brother? I was like, yeah. Oh, she was great. They all loved her, every class. She was very popular. And just, she did sport. My family are very sporty. I'm not. I don't do sport. I never have. I don't get the appeal. Especially don't understand watching sport. And that's my sister's very opposite of that. So she's just kind of better. And like my parents always kind of preferred her. She had kids, so she gave them grandkids. I got dogs. My family, not the animal family. So no, I have no sibling rivalry story because like I've just gotten to the point where like, I don't know, I'm just going to sit here in second place. I have a better podcast than she does because she doesn't have a podcast. But if she were to have one.
Well, you had a better website.
Sure.
There you go.
I still have lifevsfilm.com. She doesn't have a website. But if she were to have a podcast, have a website, then they would probably be better than the ones I have because she's just kind of better at these kinds of things. And I'm resigned to that fact.
Does she think that you're crazy that you have a podcast and a website?
It doesn't really. I've been podcasting for 12 years. I worked out the other day. I've been hosting podcasts for like 10 years. I've released hundreds. I've hosted hundreds of episodes. I've guested on probably hundreds more. And my sister has listened to one podcast I've been on, and it was a recent one I was on in which I specifically complained about spending time with her children. That is the one podcast episode of mine she has listened to.
How did she accidentally come across that one?
I promoted it on Facebook. It's my friend Justin Gott, who also Memory of the Lamb. He has a podcast called... This will be my plug for today, I guess. It's called What Do You Love? Is his podcast, in which he just talks to people, not necessarily about films, but just about themselves and things they love. And he's basically, the ethos of the podcast is he has had a big change in terms of geography and job and everything. And he finds that when he goes to parties, the question is always, what do you do for a living? And that's not a question he likes answering at the moment. And he would much prefer to answer the question, what do you love? So that's what his pitch is. Instead of basing everything around what you do for a living, base it around your passions and what you enjoy doing. And that's, I think is great.
There is something to that.
He invited me to be a guest on his second season. And I plugged that as like, hey, this isn't about films. This is about me. And my sister was like, great, I'll listen to that. Which, hey, a good thing to do. if she had a podcast, I would have listened to it too. I didn't expect her to listen to it because, again, 12 years prior of podcasts that she hadn't listened to, including however many episodes of Movie Rob Minute that I've plugged and she hasn't listened to.
you can guesstimate how many there were. You've been on 6 seasons. Okay, five episodes each of those. That's 30.
Five for Great Escape.
Okay, plus you were on the Great Escape. You were on a second week, so that's another 5. 41. So you get the 35.
Plus this
41. This, 41 yes. Plus now,
this is,
now.
This is now 45.
Now you can have another 45.
Great.
yes.
I could have put that out. So I just thought she wouldn't. Because like the topic of having kids come up, I don't want to have kids. I've never had kids. I don't like kids. And just to talk about how I don't like kids. I'm just kind of bad at being an uncle, etc. And I just find it amusing that the only podcast mine she's listened to is the one where I complain about spending time with her children. And I'd really love it if the second podcast she listened to is this one. Just this episode where I know about her listening to us, in which I her kids. Great. no rivalry, no interest, no story. Just that 5-minute chaotic ramble that just occurred.
Okay. That is fair too. That's a good one.
And listeners, yes, I'm the one who pitched this as a topic of conversation. No, I didn't have a story then. I don't have one.
I was I was trying to be nice. I wasn't going to mention that. I wasn't going to tell everyone that it was your idea, you know, to use this as the off the beaten track stuff.
I want to hear other people's stories. I don't have any of my own.
Apparently, you want to live vicariously through everyone else's revenge stories.
I wanted to see who has them.
Well, again, I mean, last season there were a lot of top fives where people had nothing to say. Also, so you know, we do have segments. I don't force people to make sure that they have something of interest to say during the segments.
You'll start watching a bunch of Len Wiseman films for the next two seasons' time for my top five.
There you go.
Oh, no, he didn't direct that, did he? Did he direct that one?
I believe
he did.
He did. He did. Sorry. He did.
Yeah. He's directed four films, so that's going to be difficult to do.
It's true. All right, so Jay, would you like to officially give some sort of plug and tell people where they can find you?
Sure. I was recently a guest on the What Do You Love podcast about myself and things that I love. I also have a blog. It's called lifeversusfilm.com, called Life Versus Film, where my main aim has been going through the 1,001 Movies You Must See Before You Die list. I don't think I've crossed anything off since I was last on this, since I was the first week of your previous episode.
Yeah, I was going to say, since Sunday, probably not.
No, definitely not. But when I first appeared on there, still no. But that's still an ongoing aim that I'll probably never fulfill, but that's where you can find any of my writing is over there at lifeversusfilm.com.
All right, great. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for a Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. You can also send me an email to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, Jay, you feeling coming back in tomorrow to finish off first week of this season?
As long as you've got some aspirins, I'll come back tomorrow.
All right. Yeah. Sounds like a plan. So, until then, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Johnny comes marching home again. Hoorah, hoorah. We'll give him a hearty welcome then. Hoorah, hoorah. The men will cheer, the boys will shout. The ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.